Okay, we're up to the 20th chapter, Perek Chaf. We're going to be finishing the chapter today. We're up to Pasuk Lamed, which is found on page 134 in your packets. It was Rosh Chodesh, and on Rosh Chodesh was the test to see whether or not the king, in fact, was upset at David. And we're going to open up the very beginning of today's session on verse 30, Pasuk Lamed, on page 134, seeing the king's reaction. The fact that David didn't show up the first day, maybe it was some excuse, but for 2 days in a row not to show up, that's inexcusable. And he asked his son, yeah.
If he went to his father, let's say.
Right, yes.
Then he couldn't travel on Yom Kippur. How could he come back?
It was Rosh Chodesh.
So it wouldn't have been, you wouldn't get so upset if someone was on a trip and they came back a little later.
Right, you're right. You would. Right, that was the.
So that's like two different things. Either being away and not being purified.
Right, Shaul initially thought maybe the reason why he didn't come on day one was because he didn't go to the mikvah or something. But the fact that he doesn't come for 2 days, he dismissed that theory.
Seems like he was looking for it. So.
But it was at least, that was actually a positive attribute, because we see that even in his rage and anger toward David, he still found a way to be done the kaskus. Maybe that's why he didn't show up. He just wasn't pure to come to our meal. But at day number two, he doesn't show up. He turns to his son Yonas and says, "What's going on over here? Where is this guy? Where's David?" And it wasn't like he was on a different side of the table. As we learned last week, he used to sit right next to the king, because a son is not allowed to recline right next to the father. It's disrespectful. So David was strategically situated in between the king and the prince, Yonasan. He wasn't there. So on the second day, he asked Yonasan, "Where is he? Where is this guy?" And Yonasan said, "Well, you should know, he did ask me permission." He didn't ask you permission, obviously, you would have known about it, but he did ask me permission to go to his family, and that's where he is. Big deal. So why would you get upset about that? Let's see Pasuk Lamed. Vayichar af Shaul b'Yonasan. Not only was Shaul furious, he was so angry that David didn't come. Obviously, he wanted to kill him, as we know. So when a person is not thinking straight, when you don't like someone, you look at any excuse. The small little things bother you. We often find, unfortunately, in relationships and marriages, if you have, there's bickering in a relationship, the little things bother you. Normally wouldn't bother you on the first few years of marriage. All of a sudden they start bothering you, but they weren't new things. But you focus on those small things. And that's what Shaul was doing. He was bothered by this. But he wasn't just angry at David. He's angry at his son. And he said to his son, "Ben Navas Hamardus, you're the son of a rebellious woman," which the Mesudas Sion, we're going to see Rashi's interpretation in a moment. The Mesudas Sion translates that as Meloshon Oven, Ufosha, and Mardus is Loshon Marad, Mardus rebellious. You have a rebellious mother, and she's also a sinful mother. Your mother must be a sinful person. We'll discuss in a moment why he spoke so negatively about, okay, he's making fun of his mother, that's his wife, it's like, it's not much of an insult. You're trying to insult someone, but you're really insulting your own wife. "Halo yadati, do I not know, ki bocher ata leven yishai levashtecha. You have chosen for some reason this guy, I don't even want to mention his name, Ben Yishai, we know it's David, the son of Yishai, levashtecha. You accepted him, and you didn't care the fact that you're going to be completely humiliated and shamed," page 136. "And also you have embarrassed the literally the nakedness of your mother," which we'll, again, we'll have to explain what that means in a moment. If we look over here at Rashi, Rashi tells us a different spin, a different interpretation other than Mr. Sion. What does it mean that your mother was Navas Hamardus? So if you look, the Rashi begins on Pasuk Lamed, Lashon Na, Isha Nava Venada. Your Nava Nud, as we mentioned about Cain over Shabbos, he was a wanderer. She was a traveler. She's constantly moving around. But it was a negative context because when it comes to a woman, supposed to be with sneis, modesty. And there she was, always walking around, going all over the place. If we jump down to the next Rashi, which is in bold Hamardus, you jump to the line after that, where it says Dabar Acher, the first word from the line, another interpretation, Kishechatvu b'nei Binyamin m'b'no Shiloh, that when all the men of Binyamin were grabbing, literally grabbing women, Shiyatzu l'chol b'kramim, because they used to go out into the vineyards, into the fields, and they used to dance. In fact, it's brought down the Talmud. Strangely enough, that was a practice that they did on Yom Kippur, and also on the 15th day of the month of Av, for whatever reason. Nonetheless, the women used to go out and, you know, dance or whatever they were doing, and this was an opportunity for young boys to find a good shidduch. And this was before you had a shadchan. You just you picked whoever you liked, and hopefully it was a good match. She was happy with you, you were happy with her. However, Shaul, as we saw before, Shaul was a very, it's an interesting character, because he seems like a very wild guy right now. But he was a very modest individual.
Shy.
He was very shy, right. He didn't even want to accept the position initially. Hayah Shaul Baishan, he was shy and embarrassed. V'lo ratza lachtov. He did not want to take part in this ceremony, to go up to a girl and to grab her, or to say, will you date me? Will you marry me? He was too embarrassed to do that. And his wife, Shaul's wife, blushing bride-to-be, thought, if I wait for him, doesn't say. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Did he just have one wife?
I don't know. It's strange that we don't see her name, but we don't really find her in the storyline at all, as of yet, at least. Ad shibasa hi atzma uveiza paneha v'radfa acharav. She thought, you know, if I wait for him, I'm going to wait my whole life. This guy is just going to sit there and do nothing. So she got up herself and she grabbed him, right? She went and said, well, okay, we're getting married, all right, because I'm not going to wait for you any longer. So, apparently, at the time, he thought it was a great idea. But now he's speaking in a negative manner about this, about his wife, and more importantly about Yonasan's mother. That's saying that this was really beneath the dignity of a woman, and certainly someone who should be on the stature of a married to a king. She was immodest, and therefore you also obviously have some of these traits similar to her. If we look on the next page with the words of the Radak. The Radak on the very top of the page of 136 explains, what does it mean that you chose David over, and now you're humiliated, now you're embarrassed, you have embarrassed the Ervas Imecha. Translated here is your mother's nakedness. What does that mean? So the Radak says, Atan now, Yomer Hashomim. You know what the tabloids are going to say? You know what people are going to talk about you? All the rumors that you're going to create? Shiata Oev Adam Shani Sine Kein Chabini. You have a great relationship, a tremendous friendship with someone that I hate, that's not even my child. Now the question is, why are you showing more respect to this nobody than to me, the king? Maybe, says the Radak, v'hezeh boshtecho boshes ervasimecha. It will in turn cause rumors about your mother and who, in fact, your father is. Shiyamr shizinsa. People will say that really she's not from.
I'm not your father.
Right, I'm not your father. And it must be that way, because anyone in their right mind who knows that I am going to be the next king would not show allegiance and favoritism to some nobody by the name of David. He's not a nobody. But compared to being a king and me having the potential of being a king, people are going to start spreading rumors. They're going to say that you're not my son, because this is not the norm. In fact, if we even think about it even greater, it wasn't just Jonah's son that preferred David over their father, the king, but also Michal. Michal did the exact same thing. Michal, who was also the daughter of the king, or supposedly the daughter of the king, what does she do? She shows more allegiance to David than to me. So again, what you're doing is you're really you're causing some terrible negative rumors about your own mother. And perhaps going back to what Rashi was saying, he wasn't bashing his wife, but he was saying that maybe the fact that people already saw that she was a little bit more open in going out and getting men, so now that people start seeing how you're showing favoritism toward David over being over the king, maybe they're going to start thinking, as the Radak says, again, as she did this in the Krumim, in the fields, in the vineyards, maybe she did this again once she was already married to me, and really, you are not my son. So therefore, that's the reason why you're humiliating yourself by choosing him, David, over me. So that's one interpretation.
Very twisted kind of thinking.
Well, he's a twisted guy. That's one explanation. The other way that some explain,
It's not nice.
So I'm going to try my best to come up with a little better one.
Well, I'm saying the onus of him. Now, it can't be anything's wrong with me. It must be you
right.
And my wife. Nothing's wrong with me.
Right. Well, that's... Unfortunately, we see that very often, right? Especially people that they have the biggest problems. They're the ones that can't figure out why everything wrong is going their way. It must be everyone else, not them. But another way of reading this pasuk that says you chose Ben Yishai over your mother is that when it comes to monarchy, a king, what happens in the event that a king does not have children? So then the king, if they have a brother, then they'll take over the throne. What happens if he has no children and he has no brother? Then after the king dies, the queen, Queen Elizabeth, or whatever, she ends up being in charge.
Yeah, so that's the way it works in Jewish history also.
That's how it works. Yeah, it works. If there's no heirs to the throne, then the queen accepts the role, not necessarily of king, but she's the leader. She's right.
Was there a terrible queen in Jewish
history?
Yeah, we do find such a thing. So it is possible. There was a king, actually. But it is possible that a queen could take over the role of a king. So one interpretation is you're choosing David over your mother, because in the event that you die or whatever, and there's no one else except for your mother, you're choosing this guy David over your own mother. That's another interpretation. So again, that's a different way of reading this pasuk. Okay, let's move on. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Ki kol hayomim, this is the king speaking. Shaul says, all the days asher ben Yishai chai al hadam. Just as long as this Ben Yishai character, can't even mention his name, I hate him so much. As long as he's alive on the face of this earth, lo tichon ata umalchatecha. Lo tichon, as translated in the Siddur Sion, is a language of hachana v'kiyum. It will not endure, it will not exist. You remain becoming a melech, becoming the next king. The ata, and now, shalach v'kach oso elai ki ben mavesu. I want you to go and take him for me. I know you know where he is. I know you know where he is. You get him for me, bring him here, because after all, ki ben mavesu. The guy deserves to die. He deserves to die.
But if he's so suspect about his son, even if he thinks he knows where he is, why would he send him? Wouldn't you think that maybe he's
going to
find a way to save him?
Maybe this pep talk will finally break him down, you know? I mean, doesn't he realize that he's losing everything? He's throwing away his whole future, his children's future. But yeah, I mean, this is... he's also speaking Vayicharaf, in anger. And sometimes when a person is angry and they say things, they don't necessarily have the most rational thoughts coming out of their mouths. But nonetheless. Okay. Ki ben mavasu. The guy deserves to die. It's plain and simple. David should be killed. So Yonasan said, well, Wait one second. Vayan Yonasan is shalavit. So Yonasan responds to his father. But Yomer 11, he says, it's interesting, Shaul Aviv, right? Like what the Radak, he says, no, this is my father, right? You are my father. Because we know that it's his father's, but it's specifically. But Yomer Elav, Lama Yumas, why are you going to kill him? Meh Asa. What did the guy do? He deserves to die. He deserves to die. Give me any logical reason. What did he do wrong? Not only did he do nothing wrong, he defeated Goliath. He protected you. He was constantly involved in war. What did he do that was so bad that deserved to be killed? Well, the father really didn't feel that that question was worth a response, at least in words. Instead, he decides to take action, apparently against his own son. V'yatel Shaul esachanis olav hakoso. Shaul pulled out, or it's according to the Masudas Sion, v'yatel's hishlich, that he threw the spear in order to hit him. He was going to, just like that same spear he kept throwing at David's head, he now was going to start aiming it, apparently, at his own child, his own son, which some people say maybe he wasn't going to kill him, he was going to threaten him with it. Ve'yeda Yonasan, at that moment, when Yonasan saw this sword right up against his face, ki kolahi me'im aviv, Lohamis as David. It was clear that it was completely finished from his father. His father's intention 100% is to kill David. There's nothing else to say about it. We look at the Radak, the way they translate Kikola. The Radak says, in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Komer Nigmar Hadavar Belev Avi, it's completely finished in my father's heart. Lohamis as David. He 100% wishes to kill David. If you look on page 137 in the English over here, it says toward the bottom where it says 33, according to the Abarbanel, quoting the Gemara in Erechin, it implies that Shaul wanted to strike Yonasan, but not to kill him. He just wanted to warn him, just stick it through his right shoulder or something, whatever, a little bullet wound. Wouldn't kill him, just a flesh wound. In the plain sense of the verse, the commentators interpret that Shaul was so enraged that he actually tried to kill his own son. So everyone interprets that he wanted to smash him with it. The question is, did he want to kill him with it or just wound his own son? If you look down the next paragraph, quoting the Kli Yakar, it says, up until now, Yonasan felt that Shaul's pursuit of David was induced by his melancholy and illness, for which he could not be blamed. Now, however, Shaul was entirely rational during his heated argument with Yonasan, so it was now clear that David was in mortal danger at all times. And if you look, according, it's brought down that if you look at the specific wording of this pasuk, going back into the text, in pasuk Lamed Gimel, it says, Hikola hime'im aviv lohamis es David. Some interpret that, what does it mean that it was completely known among his father that he wanted to kill David? Why does it say Aviv again? It's because it's come to tell us that this was not his sickness. This was my dad. This is really him. This is my father, and this is his complete intentions. It's not his illness that wishes to kill him, but when he's in his right frame of mind, he won't harm David. No, even me'im aviv l'hamis says David. Okay, so that's how some interpret this verse.
Rabbi, right after what you get in the English,
yeah,
on the next comment, says, although Saul had sworn not to kill David, and surely would not violate his oath if he was rational, perhaps he went to court. When did he swear not to kill?
He swore way back. In this paragraph,
why did he do that?
Yonasan asked him point blank, and he said, no, I swear you would never do such a thing. And apparently, according to this explanation, which you just read, is because it's hard to believe Shaul, who on some levels is a tzaddik, how is it possible that he's going to go against the shvuah? I mean, that seems to be something he wouldn't do. So that's how we must assume, maybe somewhere behind the scenes, not written in the Pesukim, he must have had his oath nullified in some way.
So what do you think, just here in our group, that yeah. it was because of his, mental illness,
right.
or it was because of a real desire to kill him?
Saying, according,
I would think it was because of his melancholy.
No, that's his father was in the right line.
There's different interpretations.
So he tried to be such an evil person all of a sudden.
He was, he realized that this person was a threat to the throne, you know. Not only, it's not only to me, it's my son. And I want my son to take this job. You know, this is my, you know, it's the destiny of my son to take over this position in all future generations. And who is this nobody taking the throne?
Where was Shmuel in all this? Why isn't Shmuel intervening or telling
right. and we see
that he's finished.
And we
this
see
is the way out. Yeah.
This is the
way. I missed this.
Well,
he knows that David is the next king.
Yes, mm-hmm. And even even Shaul should know this, because as we mentioned that when he ran away from Shaul because Shaul threw some spears at him, he ran right to Shmuel and prophesied. And not only did all the messengers that Shaul sent prophesied, and we said that the prophecy was that David will be the next king.
Right.
Shaul himself went, and he also prophesied, apparently, that David will be the next king. So it's unbelievable, but nonetheless, he's still, right, he's...
I think Shmuel's not right there anyhow. I mean, I don't know, they carry information those days, but he's not in that particular area, so...
Not now,
what's
right.
What's going on in that plot may never come.
No, I don't mean necessarily physically.
You mean as a nubby?
Yeah.
I think we said at one time maybe he was somewhat limited in some of the things. We brought that up once before.
Well, he was getting old.
So, I mean, we see him then, and here he is, because he went from that place, because Shaul was in the middle of prophesizing, and then David basically ran back to speak to Yonasan, because he knew he had at least that window of opportunity to speak to Yonasan about, said, your father's trying to kill me, he's trying to kill me, and then Yonasan said, no, he's not trying to kill me, and this is where this whole story unfolds. That now Yonasan realizes it's true, and now Yonasan, as we're going to see in a few more Pesukim, is going to have to warn David to let him know that you have to be careful because my father is out to get you. Okay, let's continue with Pasuk Lamed Daled. But Yakum Yonasan Mi'im Hashulchan Bichari Af. Yonasan was really upset. He was so upset that he lost his appetite. He could not eat. Lo'ochol b'yom ha'chodesh ha'sheni lechem. He could not eat any of the bread on the second day of Rosh Chodesh. Ki netzav el David, because he was very upset and worried and concerned about David. Ki hichlimo ovid, because his father humiliated him. And Rashi says, ki hichlimo ovid bishvil David, because of what he did and said about David, that he was going to kill him, he felt so embarrassed and humiliated. Perhaps what that means is that David said, your father's going to kill me. And I was so naive to believe it wasn't true, and now I'm humiliated because now I know it's in fact the truth. But we see this interesting phenomenon that often when a person is very upset, you cannot eat. I lost my appetite. I've never had that problem in my life. I always have an appetite. But apparently that's the idea with Yonasan. Okay. So that's... Okay. Now... It's interesting, we actually learn out, the Talmud learns out from these psukim, the importance of tochacha. The pasuk says, hocheach tocheach et amitachi, you have to rebuke someone. The question is, to what extent do you have to rebuke someone? You know, if you think that they may not listen, they may listen, do you have to rebuke them? So the Talmud actually learns in Erechin that you are obligated to rebuke someone up until 3 points. Until they hit you, until they curse you, and until they humiliate you. Right? That's what the Gemara says. And if you look at these psukim, this is exactly what happens. Yonasan is rebuking his father. He said, why are you killing him? You're murdering someone. You don't have a right to kill him. You're wrong. So what did the son have to undergo to give that rebuke to his father? He was almost hit by the spear. He was cursed, made fun of his own mother, right? And he was also humiliated, as we just ended off the pasuk, ki hichlimo aviv, because his father he was embarrassed because of what his father said. And the idea it's brought down that is that even over here, when Yonatan was pretty certain that his father would not listen to him, he was not going to accept this rebuke, he felt it was still an obligation, a halachic obligation, to rebuke that person, even his own father, nonetheless. And this is what it's brought down in halacha. It says, "V'im yodoa, if you know she'in devar nishma'im, that a person's words will not, they're not going to listen to you. Lo yomim barabim, you should not rebuke them in a group setting. Of a biyachid chayav hochicho." When it comes to individually, quietly, you must rebuke them. Ad shiakenu o shiakalenu, until they either hit you or until they curse you. You still have the obligation of rebuke. And that's how, of course, it needs more work, but nonetheless, that's a source that in halacha that this is how far a person needs to go to rebuke a person, not just to turn the other cheek and say, yeah, that's their problem. We have an obligation of Kol Yisrael Rebim Zelazel, we have to care for and be concerned about every single Jew. Okay, let's move on. Pasuk Lamed Hey. Pasuk tells us, Vayehi Boker, it was the morning. Vayetze Yonasan Hasadil Amoy David, and Yonasan went to the field on that designated time and place where David was, and he didn't go by himself. Venar Katzon Imo. He brought a small child with him, someone who probably didn't have any clue what was going on. Now, he knew that his father was going to kill him. Why did he decide to go home, take a nice bubble bath, take a nice leisurely sleep, and wake up the next morning? Why wouldn't he have just run right into the fields? So the Masudas David tells us a very practical reason why he did not do this. The Masudas David says, "Bayom," which is the first wide line, "Bayom Ashlish and Mehachodesh, on the third day of the month." He didn't go during the second day, immediately after he found out the bad news about his father, that he wants to kill David. Because Yonasan was concerned in his thinking process, maybe someone will figure out this, that I'm really planning to meet David. And therefore he decided to wait in the morning. Why is he going out in the middle of the field, in the middle of the night? What's he doing there? There's no business being in the middle of the field. What's he going to do there? Must be David's hiding there. They're going to kill him. Therefore he waited until the morning, says the Masudas David. She'az haderech lasos teol b'liros achitzim. This is a time which people go for nice walks, little strolls, and also they go hunting. They shoot quail, just like our vice president. U'bal karcho yashiv sham David adbo. David was sitting there patiently or impatiently until finally he would get word from Yonasan. So the Masudas David practically tells us the reason why they waited until the morning.
Against his wishes? I think that's what
yeah, I think the idea was that because they initially planned to find out maybe on the second day, and he had to stick around and wait an additional day, which was later than he was hoping to meet him, but to ensure the safety of David, he decided to wait an extra day. Apparently, that's the idea. Bal Korach, that's what I think. Okay. All right. Let's move on to in Pasuk Lamed Vav. So there he is with his quiver. He has his arrows, his bow, and this little guy who chases after his arrows. Right? Vayomer Lenara. So he was shooting his arrows. And as we knew, the whole test was based on the words that he chose will determine whether or not David can come back or he should go far away and run away. So let's listen to Pasuk Lamed Vav, what he says to this lad. V'yomer lanar, he says to this nar, Rutz matzna asachitzim, run, go and find these arrows, asher nochi mar, which I shot, hanar ratz, and the boy ran, v'yara hachetzi lahaviro. And he went after the arrows that were shot beyond him. V'yavo hanar ad mekom hachetzi, and the boy went to this place where the arrows were. Asher yara Yonasan, which Yonasan shot them that distance. V'yikra Yonasan, and Yonasan screamed from afar, he said, Achri Hanar, he said to this child, Miyomer, Halo Achetzi Mimcha Baholo. Is it not that these arrows are very far from you that you should continue to go? You should keep going. And those are the key words that Yonasan said to the Nar, keep going, because he was indicating that the arrows were further away than where the Nar was. So you have to go, it's even back, which he was telling David, don't come close, go back. If it would have been the other way around, he would have told the Nar, oh, the arrows are, come closer, that you over, your the arrows are closer to me, come closer. But since David did not hear those words, he realized, in fact, the king was out to get him, unfortunately. Pasuk Lamed Ches. Vayikra Yehonasan Achri Hanar, and Yonasan called after the Nar. Mehera Chusha, it's brought down by the Mishnah Sion, is also a language of Mehiros. Come quickly, very quickly, Mehiros also quickly. Al Talmud, do not stand still, right? Don't just stand there. Vilakin Nar Yonasan es Hachitzen Vyavo El Adonav. So he gathered up all of the arrows and he brought them to his master, to Yonasan. Pasukamates, Vanar lo yadam uma. Now this lad had no idea what was flying. No, he was doing whatever he was told. He didn't know what David was overhearing this conversation. Ach Yonasan v'David yadu es adavar. But we can assure you that not only Yonasan, but David also was there, and David knew exactly what this message meant. Pasuk Mem. V'yitin Yonasan es kelav el hanar shirlo. So Yonasan took his Kalev, which the Radak tells us that refers to his kashto, the chetzi of his bow and his arrows, which Kalev means his vessels, but his vessels for archery. So he took these, his bow and his arrow, and he gave it to the Nar, Ashurlo, the boy that was with him. The Yermelo, and he said to this little boy, Lech Have Ha'ir, could you do me a favor? And these are kind of cumbersome for me to carry, and I'm done shooting arrows for the day. Please bring them to the city. Your job is finished here. So, what did the boy do? Of course, he did exactly as he was instructed. Hanarba, so the little child went away, the boy went, and therefore, all we had was Yonasan all alone in the middle of this area, this field. And then, the David come me'etzel hanegev. David, realizing, overhearing this whole thing, realized that, in fact, Yonasan was alone, and therefore David felt comfortable enough at that point to come up Me'etzel HaNegev, which is translated over here as the south side of the stone, which the Masudas, David says it's Masad Dromi Shel Evan Ha'azel, the Dorum, the south of this marker, which was this huge rock. So he came out from this landmark on the bottom of page 136. And he fell down to the ground. And he bowed down three times. So just, we constantly see this idea of three. We see three constantly, which we explained before, which we'll get to again. But Yishku Ish Es Rehu, and they kissed one another in friendship. But Yimchu Ish Esri Ehu, and they cried on each other's shoulders, Ad David Higdil, which until David continued, which means David continued to cry extra, exceedingly, very much. We go back to page 136 for a moment. Okay, the Mesunas David tells us the very bottom line in the Mesunas David, David Higdil, Harbe Livchos Yosem Yonasan. It says that even though Yonasan and David cried, says the Mesudas David, that David actually cried more than Yonasan. Because Yonasan at least has, you know, he's upset, but at least no one's trying to kill him. You know, he'll just go back to the palace and call it a day. For David, he really had a good reason to cry exceedingly. Because after all, now his life is in danger. It's interesting, the language. If we go back to 138, David Higdil, until David continued to cry. And then the next pasuk says, "V'yomer Yonasan le David lech l'shalom." David was told by Yonasan, "Go in peace." which some interpret this to mean that David was crying so uncontrollably that Yonatan was beginning to get nervous, right? Okay, fine, there's no one around. But if there's no one around, you don't have to scream and make all this noise. And David had absolutely no control anymore of his ability to withhold his tears and his sobbing. To the point, some interpret that that's the reason why it says, Ad David Higdil, he kept crying so much until the point that Yonatan had to say, Lech Shalom, go, go, go. Because if you stay anymore and keep making all this noise, someone's going to end up figuring out that you're here. Continuing the pasuk, so he said, why don't you go in peace? And I really mean that when I say Lech L'Shalom. Because Asherinish Banu Shenenu, that which we swore to one another, Anachta B'Shem Hashem Lemor, we spoke and we swore in the name of God, Hashem Yehem Beni Veinecha, Hashem will be between us, Uvein Zari, Uvein Zarecha Ad Olam, among our children, their children, forever. That's something which I am 100% going to adhere to, even though now I know you're going to be killed. I could easily have just revealed who you are, you'll be killed. I'll take over the position as being the king for my father. Nonetheless, I'm going to uphold out my shvua, my promise that I swore to you. Now, one of the...
What's that arrow there?
The arrow means, if you look on the left side, there's also this little shaded part, which means that's where the Haftorah ends. Now remember, this is part of the Haftorah Machar Chodesh. So it tells us that's the end. That happens to be the end of the chapter as well. Now, one of the more difficult questions in this chapter is as follows. The beginning of the chapter was we introduced this whole idea of David and Yonatan devising this incredible plan of being able to secretly tell one another exactly the king's motives. I'm going to shoot a bunch of arrows. If it's, I tell my servant to go far away, that means run. If not so far away, it means you can come back. So this way you'll know to run or to come back. So the question, if we just read these psukim, they did exactly that, and the message was clear. My father wants to kill you. But what ends up happening? They end up meeting anyway. They end up having a conversation, talking to one another, they embrace, they bow down and kiss, have a little story, they remind each other of the Shavua. Why do they have to do this whole business with the arrows to begin with? If after all, they were able to encounter one another immediately afterwards. So there's two basic answers. There's many answers, I'm sure. But the simple explanation is that how did they know that was going to happen, right? How did they know, right? It's possible that the Nar would figure it out, or he would say, why don't you please bring the bow and arrow? And maybe he would say, no, I'm not going to leave you alone, unattended here. And then he would have no choice but to have to go, and he wouldn't be able to have an opportunity to speak to David one last time. So maybe that was the idea. This is almost like to really make sure 100% the message would be brought over. Another explanation is brought down by the Chafetz Chaim. We mentioned the significance of three. Significance of three, the three arrows, why was it three arrows? All you need is one arrow, why three? So we mentioned that there is a significance of three with regard to the Baal Lashon Hara. That this whole thing came about because of evil gossip. And Lashon Hara affects three people. Just like those three arrows, just like him bowing down three times, it affects the person speaking it, the person hearing it, and also the person you're speaking about. That's the destruction of three. And the arrows, which then themselves have the potential to do damage, to be destructive, that's how the significance of three is. So some explain that that was the whole reason of the Lashon Hara, which we're going to see later on, that Shaul heard that David was rebelling and David was going to take over the throne, and this was really gossip, this was Lashon Hara. Fine. So the Chafetz Chaim tells us an interesting halacha with regard to Lashon Hara. What happens if you have the right to speak Lashon Hara? In other words, it falls under the category of that there's a toelas. There's a benefit and a purpose for you giving this Lashon Hara. And sometimes in halacha we find this often. Let's say someone calls and says, Hashinuch, what do you think about this boy? What do you think about this girl? Now that's not an opportunity for you to tear into them, you know? You have to know the laws. What can you say? What can't you say? But there is more leeway. Because, you know, we're talking about person's life. Right. The Chofetz Chaim says something very interesting. We learn out from this story that even when it comes to a purpose, a toeles, lashon hara still needs to be avoided even when it's permissible. And he says as follows. I'm just going to read these couple of lines. He says, Im hu yachul saviv esa toeles hazos, gufa be'etz acheres. If you can somehow give over the information in any other way than speaking it, shleit starach l'saperes inyan lashon hara alav, you don't have to actually say the words of lashon hara, azay b'chol gavni asul l'saper. You are not allowed to say it. Even though, technically, you're doing nothing wrong. But kvana, the intention here, is that feel open shemutu l'galos l'sheni, even when you're technically allowed to say this information, k'deish l'yinazek, so you're not going to cause undue harm, like by a shidduch maybe. Or, let's say, in our example, your life is in danger. My father wants you dead. That's really lashon hara, because you're saying that my father is a killer. He's a Russia, basically. My father wants to murder. So what the Chofetz Chaim says, im yochel save shetav ha'tuelas v'yizar ha'sheni mibilti l'saper lo, if you can do so without having to speak, harizet osur l'saper lo ha'lashon hara, you're not allowed to speak lashon hara. So the Chofetz Chaim, interestingly enough, learns out the whole story of the arrows to show that Yonah's son did not want to speak lashon hara about his father so much, even though maybe he will have the opportunity to tell and speak to Yonah, to David personally, directly, he would rather do so in a hinted fashion with this, the means of the arrows, so that he would not have to actually speak lashon hara. And the reason for this is, what, silly, if it's a mutter, it's mutter. If it's usr, it's usr. What's the idea? What's the problem? And it's all about training. I think it's all about training. Because even if something is permissible, but if you're, it is lashon hara, but you're allowed to speak lashon hara, but once you become accustomed to be able to speak lashon hara even in a permissible form, then maybe you may transfer that over to things which you may not be allowed to say, real lashon hara. Therefore, says the Chofetz Chaim, he learns that from this story, that as much as we're able to avoid speaking, even if it has a toelos, a purpose, a person should avoid to do so, giving over the message, not ignoring and not saying, oh, I'm not going to tell over the message. You have to tell over the message. But to do so in a way to minimize the speaking of lashon hara as much as possible. Stop here.